To what extent does the picture of the ideal woman in Proverbs 31 reinforce or undermine male chauvinism? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson. We continue our series on the book of Proverbs. This is our last one and focuses on the last chapter, Proverbs 31. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, Assistant Professor of Philosophy. You know, I think I'm tempted to read this ode to a perfect woman, the ideal woman, just so that we all have a good understanding of what we're talking about. It begins with chapter 31, verse 10. And by the way, this comes back from Lemuel's mother. So this is, you start the book with admonitions from the father.
Yeah.
And you finish up with an admonition from the mother.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Verse 10 of chapter 31. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still night. She provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected in the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household, and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honor her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise to the city gate. Note that she's called a one who fears the Lord. But none of that list has to do with any explicitly religious activities.
It's the way she lives here.
Yep. So, Linda, I want you to tell me whether that undermines or supports male chauvinism.
Well, I was, as you were reading, I was thinking, I don't know how to answer that question, first of all. But secondly, I was thinking about Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice when Mr. Darcy is proclaiming the attributes of an accomplished woman. And she says, "My, you certainly do comprehend a great deal in the word." And he says, "Well, do you know anyone like this?" She says, I can't imagine knowing anyone who would actually fit this description. of the accomplished woman, given your definition. Anyway, so I don't know.
Well, I have a couple of things I would say.
Okay, you say.
And first of all, I have seen this passage produce two very different or very opposite reactions. I have known of some women who have read this and have felt enormously motivated to turn the world upside down for noble and good causes. And they love this piece of scripture because to them it's a challenge.
This is a strong woman.
Yeah. I know I cannot do all of these things, but I'm going to bend every effort to try and achieve that.
Yep.
See?
Yep.
I have also known women who read that and pretty much thrown up their hands and said, I can't even get started with that. That's not. And I don't think it has anything to do with the gender. I think if there was a passage of scripture that talked about men this way.
See, one of the scary things about the Bible and about every religious piece of literature, that which charges one person up deflates another person.
Yeah.
But
I would make the observation that this is a remarkable picture. If this is actually the wife in actuality, she is no retiring wallflower or no subservient whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
This was an entrepreneurial woman who is highly respected in a community, and her respect mm-hmm. is so much that it extends to her family and to her husband. He rides on her shirt tails in the the city gate, so to speak. See, so I, you know, it's an interesting thing, but I don't want it. I tremble that it's the vision it casts is so enormous that it can be very discouraging.
Well, what I was looking for, you know, the one verse there where it says she speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue.
Yeah.
I was wanting one little note there that she teaches the men in her community.
Yeah. Well, maybe she does.
I would guess she probably did.
You're meddling, Alden. You're meddling.
I know.
I would agree that this is a portrait of a very strong human being.
Yeah.
Who
very entrepreneurial.
She isn't, and this is quite unlike the Greek model. Certainly in the 5th and 4th and 3rd centuries.
What was the Greek model? I don't know.
Well, the woman in the creation of the home. In fact, Euripides, who had a reputation for being a bit of a curmudgeon as a Greek playwright, actually discusses this catch-22 problem. The man is responsible for the public. He is the public face of the household.
Family, yeah.
He's the one who is from the front door out and into the community. The woman is inside the house. So back inside the house, there is a courtyard and all the work that goes on in the courtyard. And the woman's rooms, the wife's rooms, are not only inside the house, but they are in upstairs, especially in the bigger homes, in the back of the house, so that she is not seen from the street. So her sphere of influence is inside the home. And what happens when a wife is lost is that the house loses the hospitality within the home that is necessary for the husband to be represented well in the community. And when the husband is lost, then the public face of the house is lost, and then the children lose. So in a way, he's saying this system doesn't work very well, whereas what we have here is a model of a much more whole person who is actually involved within the home, but outside the home as well, securing the financial viability
and
of the home.
She's making plans.
He has full confidence in her wisdom.
Yeah.
So this is not a, you know, the feminine mind is incapable of understanding kind of a picture of a woman. I like this, actually. Not that I can ever be it, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think our challenge here is to make sure that we find those passages of Scripture that help people.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our house, I'll be quite candid. I like a world where there's still plenty of challenges. My gentle wife, Wanda, wants one free from conflict.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've often said if the Lord was looking for someone to design a perfect world, she would be ideal.
But it wouldn't be your perfect world because you like the challenge.
No, I'd let her do the designing. That's fine.
Oh.
But the point is that for fixing up a broken world,
it's
just, you know, it's very difficult.
Yeah, the perfect world would have a rubber-lined room where Alden can go and bounce around.
In fact, that's what we have at our house. We put extra insulation around my study so that while she's sleeping, I can scream and holler and shout and do whatever I want. Now, there's one other aspect, and I think we have enough time to cover it. It's the first part here. The theme here was women and wine, and I would like to read for you this short section. I've had an interesting personal experience with this, but it has to do with alcohol, and I would be very interested to get your reaction. This is the mother again speaking. Listen, my son. Listen, son of my womb. Listen, my son, the answer to my prayers. Do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. It is not for kings, Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for rulers to crave beer, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed, and deprive all the oppressed of their rights. Let beer be for those who are perishing, wine for those who are in anguish. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I first heard that, probably wasn't the first time I read it, on the streets of Spokane one summer when I was doing literature evangelism, door-to-door selling. And this guy came up in downtown Spokane. He was walking not a very straight line, thick, and he showed me that verse. And he said, I do that.
I do that. I drink and forget my poverty?
Yeah. And it seems to me that this may be an indication, at least I'm tempted, and I would like to have confirmation or rebuke from you two, that this is probably the first indication of a narcotic principle, that if people are in pain, help them. But yeah. if you're a king and want to use your head, don't touch the stuff.
Yeah. I was thinking about medicine in the Civil War era, mm-hmm. where the anesthetic was a stiff swig of whiskey.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, because that was the one thing they had that would numb.
Yep.
And so I see this, but of course it does suggest that life is not ideal and that you are not making it. And so I think it's an anesthetic principle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's quite clear for university students that they want to use their heads. Don't touch the stuff.
Yeah. What strikes me more here, mm-hmm. though, is the verse 5, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed, is that one of the reasons I do not drink any alcohol is because one of the first effects it has is it numbs your capacity to choose wisely and to think. And, you know, I like what happens in my mind, but I have enough trouble keeping it organized that I don't, you know, that
you
I
don't need anything to complicate that
correct,
process.
That's correct. So even before you get to the health issues and the possible addictive properties, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't want my mind, it has enough work to do that doesn't need to be numbed by something like this.
I wouldn't disagree with anything you said there. I've read this, I mean, we've read these passages, some of them many times. There are other ways too that we can render ourselves incapable of thinking clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And so while this is literally true and still true, interestingly, of the effects of alcohol and other drugs, there are also, you know, we can, by not getting proper sleep, we were talking about that with David a little bit earlier, not getting proper sleep, not getting proper exercise, not letting ourselves just play. Yeah. You know, giving our minds rests. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's another little spin-off here that I have to think about more, is that, you know, we tend to be very disdainful of people who are addicts, who are addicted to alcohol and drugs. And actually, some of that addiction is driven by the adverse circumstance of their lives.
That's
and
exactly
they
right.
They are trying to hide it.
There's tremendous emotional pain.
The problem is that once you've tasted the release that comes from alcohol, you can never get away from that.
Yeah, well, the same is true of hard drugs.
Oh, sure. When I was a young pastor, I had a young mother who was, she had four preschool boys. And she told me, Pastor, she says, just like that, I can find drugs. She was in Fontana, California. Just two contacts and I can get drugs again.
Mm-hmm.
Just a terrible temptation to find release. And that's a great advantage of never having touched things like that.
Yeah.
Because it is...
I agree. I actually agree, but I would also say that these aren't the only ways.
Yeah, that's very true.
Alden, you've done good work for us. Thank you.
Well, this has been more fun than it should have been, probably.
Yes.
It's just great joy to be able to sit down with colleagues in the faith, and I want to thank Linda and Dave for participating.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Also, Dave Olson, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.